G'day, I'm Lola Berry, nutritionist, author, actor, TV presenter, and professional oversharer. This podcast is all about celebrating failure because I believe it's a chance for us to learn, grow, and face our blind spots. Each week, I'll interview a different guest about their highs as well as their lows, all in a bid to inspire us to fearlessly fail. Hello. Today on the pod, I have a longtime mate jumping on. His name is Charlie Goldsmith. You might have heard about him before from his healing. He's also had a TV show called The Healer. But we also talk about in this ep his passion for health. And he actually helped me nearly 10 years ago work through an eating disorder. Literally, he took me under his wing. I lived with him for like 3 months and he helped me really, I want to say, fall in love with food properly again, like understand the purpose of food. I was using it to self-sabotage and it's like I was leaning on food for all the wrong reasons, and he really helped me to work on that relationship with food. So I thought we'd be talking heaps about his healing in this ep, but we ended up kind of going down this health and wellness path, which I'm really excited about because that's my memories of my time with Charlie. So it was really awesome to have him on the pod. He's a very passionate person. He's kind. And at the end of the day, this guy just cares so much. And it was an absolute honor to have you on the pod, CG. Hope you guys like it. Charlie Goldsmith, I'm so pumped to have you on this podcast for so many reasons. So you're a healer. You're a businessman, you're an inventor, you're an entrepreneur, but you're also my friend of, do you know how many years?
You know, I don't, but it's got to be quite a few at this point, doesn't it?
I checked last night, 18 years.
18 years.
I met you when I was 18.
Of course, yeah.
And I've just turned 36.
Wow, when you were DJing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you remember your favourite drink at the bar back in the non-health, less healthy days?
Oh, God. I'm sure my liver can remember. My favourite back then.
It didn't exist at most bars. It involved a sweet drink beginning with R. Ribena.
Oh, Ribena, yeah. Oh, amazing. I used to, yeah.
Ribena and a vodka.
Yeah.
You got me.
It was very,
this is when I was 18,
good.
So you would have been like, you're only a few years older than me.
Yeah, I'm 41. How old are you?
Just turned 36.
Yeah. So Ribena is true. I liked sweet. I never liked the flavor of alcohol like some people seem to. So I needed to hide it.
Mask
back
it.
Then. Yeah.
That was one of my first memories of you because we're both from Melbourne. And so I went through last night and I did a little bit of time and I was like, okay, so the DJ party days, but then you built one of my first websites as well via cassette.
We did. So I can't remember anything.
I had a little.
I do remember that. I do. I actually do remember.
And then I had a lot of trouble with an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, really helped me in so many ways. And we went away to Perth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you gave me a roof over my head for many months.
I housed you.
Yeah.
And lectured you.
Yeah, yeah. I learned so much.
I remember that more. That's probably more. I'm not surprised I don't remember my drinking days, but
yeah.
I've blanked it out. But yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, you legend. Yeah. So I was like, I made a little history of us, but then I was like, you've done so many incredible things. And I believe you're very self-made in everything you do and you create. You kind of like get an idea for something like cassette. Is it true that you were like 19 when you set that business up?
Well, sort of. I was 19 when I started doing the sort of fundamentals that became that business. So I taught myself how to use like Photoshop and programs like that. And then someone asked me to make a presentation for them.
Yeah.
And then they offered me money, which was nice. I needed the money. And then sort of after a few little jobs for them, it sort of became a business. So it was about 20 when cassette started. And then yeah, I mean, in my lounge room, it was not anything like it's become. But yes, it started very organically and very brick by brick.
How cool though, because I remember coming to your office in Richmond and like having meetings with you there, and I just I love that you've kind of always, I feel like you've always marched the beat of your own drum. Like other memories that I share with you is when you owned Celebrate Health.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go to the actual factories and you'd be like, come on, you come with me. Mm-hmm. And you would be bringing out like a really healthy sugar-free sauce or a, and that range became like 20 different items, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like you've done a lot of amazing stuff. You haven't even touched on the healing.
I've got this problem that when I have an idea, I really want to do it despite the ramifications of trying to do something. As you know, with your, even just with your coffee, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trying actually. I'm at the point in my life where I'm middle-aged now, which someone told me on social media. And I've just realized I've had enough of following through with every idea I've got because I have a new idea every day pretty much. And I always think they're good regardless of whether they are actually good or not. And I suffer definitely from when I have an idea, I want to actually do it.
Mm.
So it's a good thing. It can be quite healthy, but it also can be dangerous, you know, because you keep wanting to do things and sometimes you want to rest and instead you come up with an idea to do the next thing.
But I feel like that's innately who you are. You're Virgo as well. Like you set your goal, your mind to something and then you go ahead and do it. Like
correct.
Whether it fails or not, or you sell, like you've sold a few businesses and companies, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. I definitely want to get onto healing, but can we talk about your passion for health?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a trained nutritionist and you were teaching me about health when I was living with you. Like you really helped me understand that I had a really unhealthy relationship with food and I was totally obsessed with all the wrong things and sugar mm-hmm. as well.
You did like sugar, yeah.
I did. Yeah. And I think for you, one thing that for me, knowing over the years, you've kind of had this real, it's like you've always honored your own health and you've always respected your own health, but you also, you walk the talk. So if you tell me, Lolly, you should be eating, like in one of my books I wrote, Charlie's salad with mm-hmm. salmon. Remember mm-hmm. that salmon salad you'd make over, we'd make it all, it was on high rotation. Is it still in your life, that salad?
I had to quit it because I realized that the salmon that I was getting more easily is no good for you.
That's
so
right.
Back then no one, we didn't really know that as much. And as soon, I've sort of, my personality type is no matter how much I like something, once I find out it's not good for me, that's the last time I have it. So I did love a salad salmon. And what did I just say?
It sounded good.
It didn't sound backwards. I did love a salmon salad. And now if I find a wild salmon, then I'll have it. And you can get that from some places, typically frozen, you know, around here. So I will do it sometimes, but it's not a staple because, you know, health is such an evolving thing. It's like what we think is healthy today. In another couple of years, we might find out that it's not for some reason, which can happen, or it's not good for me for some reason. And so I think that's where I've always, despite, you know, I'm not a trained nutritionist or anything like that, I think that there's knowledge and then there's the ability to apply knowledge, and those two things are not, you know, connected at the hip. They should be, but they're not. So you can know everything you need to know and not have the discipline or the follow through or the motivation to actually stick to that. And I think for me, that's something, the one thing I've always had. I've always been really interested in health and had the ability to then be able to change in a moment and go, okay, well, that's not good for me. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, you are very, very disciplined, much more than I am. I also had a very, and I don't know that you have ever had this, but like I had such a psychological connection to what I was eating, whereas you felt much more black and white about like, well, that's not healthy, so don't poison yourself, Lola. You know, you had such a clear and simple, I would say your health ethos has always been quite simple and straight down the line.
Mm.
Would you agree?
I think so. And I mean, I do understand that it does get complex when we have, you know, when we're sort of self-using things like food or drugs or anything to self-sabotage as well. So, you know, I find that like last night, for example, I binge ate frozen berries. So at least if I do, I think we're all capable of having those moments, those weeks, those days, those meals, those periods where we are actually, we lose self-control because we're not in a good place or
exhausted,
whatever. So what I've always tried to do is make sure that my out of control is with things that are intelligent but also satisfying.
Yeah.
So you know, a bowl of frozen berries, you know, you're still getting probably, it was probably too much sugar still but with the amount I ate, but just lots of benefits.
Yeah.
And I still won't feel as good the next day as I ordinarily would. But that's very different to if that had been its equal in
Mars
something.
Bars and
that would be worse. So I think that's what, you know, like over the years, very few people escape from having difficult periods. But I think if you can channel it at things that aren't the worst, then, you know, you get through it more easily.
My memory of living with you was blueberries and sheep's yogurt was your favorite go-to.
I still like that. My daughter loves her sheep's yogurt and raspberries, so we still have it in the house, and I have it sometimes. But I don't respond that well to, definitely not to dairy products, and I can have some sheep's yogurt, but I can't have it too often, or I suffer it. So and it's hard. If you have one bite of yogurt, it's very hard not to have 100 more.
Yeah.
So that's also been something I've been good at, is knowing exactly that there's some things that you're better off to have no bites than one.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, so like if you've got I've got a bucket of blueberries in the fridge, and if I have one today, I'll have 100. But if I have none, I'll have none. And I know that sounds sort of logical, but it's that little bit can make you go much further, especially if it's got sugar in it, because you're suddenly like, oh, give me all that sugar. So that's also where I've sort of been quite good at knowing the gateway to overdoing something and making sure that I don't.
I can relate to that totally, because you and I are both living in a similar part of Australia where we have access to incredible blueberries.
They're so cheap. They're so cheap. It's a whole bucket for like $25 for a kilo.
Oh, and they're the best, the Nuribar blueberries.
They're amazing.
The smug. I know. Yeah. As you were describing, I was like, so my boyfriend and I, when we buy it, we're like, are we just going to get a carton this week and make it last like 4 days, or are we going to go all out and get the bucket? So if we have the bucket, we eat too many. So we try to get the carton.
It's
the same thing. But I can relate to you with the health stuff. I was just really excited to talk to you about your vision and perspective on health, because I spent last night on the My Good Habits website and it looks cool.
It's good.
Like, you've got meditation, you've got food, nutrition, you've got movement as well, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So is it like a program, like a health program?
Yeah, it is a health program. Basically, in my work, I get a lot of people coming to me for help, and they're usually, when I look at them, typically I see a lot of things they could be doing for themselves. Mm. And I think that, you know, in my own personal health experience and what I've witnessed in others, is that, you know, 90% of things can be done through, you know, those sorts of things you just mentioned, through, you know, meditation, certainly diet and exercise are probably number one and two, and two and one, I think. And then there's lots of other things, just dealing with our own trauma is a big one, to deal with those food addictions and things. And I've seen, by making that program, a lot of people who had come to me for help don't need it anymore.
Mm.
You know, and I think it's much more powerful that if you can teach someone to be healthy themselves, you're going to help them, or they're going to help themselves from, you know, hopefully all the problems they've got, and also the things that may have come or that would have come that now won't come in the future, you know. So that I find that much more satisfying as a human, to teach people, you know, that analogy of teaching people how to fish. And I think with health, it's so critical, because we're so disempowered by industry, you know. From, if I have a rash, I go to the doctor, get a cream, and I just keep putting the cream on. Whereas what if it's just a simple change to not have that rash? And then what does the rash, you know, what is that symbolizing? Is my immune system, you know, struggling? Have I got inflammation? And so the rash might just be the first thing.
Mm.
You know, the next thing might be arthritis, or, you know, some sort of pain condition, or, you know, lots of different things that can potentially come. And so I think that it's sad to me how many things there are out there that are really disempowering, and how many people are like, I'm not well, who or what can fix me? instead of asking themselves, well, how can I fix myself? Actually, something interesting, it's probably not in your questions, but occasionally I post on my social media about, you know, the effects of, you know, diet and illness, and certainly more recently the correlation between obesity and severe illness with COVID, which is just
quite clear.
It was obvious before they had the studies, you know, so that we sort of knew that people who were already unhealthy would potentially have a lot worse outcomes. But that's true for everything. The person that is very unhealthy is going to be more likely to get injured when they do activity. They're going to be more likely to have, you know, sleep issues, hormonal issues, mood stuff, because, you know, their body's not working properly. And I found it really fascinating that when I posted it, there were people who you know, were positive about, you know, understanding that, and positive in that they were like, you know, thank you for sharing that. I'm going to address my issues. And then there were other people, and this is the most interesting, that accused me of fat shaming. And when they accused me of fat shaming, they would say, you know, well, you're fat shaming. And I'd be like, well, I didn't fat shame anyone. Mm. Just said there's a correlation between, you know, severe illness of COVID, but also heart disease, type 2 diabetes, all these things.
Anything with inflammation.
Yeah. And so, and then I got questions, well, what are you going to do about it? And I was like, oh, I didn't know that was my job. But I guess what I would do about it is I'd like to see more education for people. I'd like to see maybe taxes on the very unhealthy foods, and subsidies on healthy food. And then I would like to see, so when I said that, people would say to me, well, that's just, you're just now attacking poor people. It's a tax on poor people. Mm. And I'm like, well, you can't win if you can't put support in. And so what that led me to do, which I found even more interesting, because people then accused me of being out of touch, like, you've got you're rich. I'm not rich, so don't believe that. But that's obviously the impression people have, and therefore you don't understand what it's like to be poor and not be able to afford healthy food. And that, I was like, well, that's what the subsidies would be for. But so then it prompted me to, I went onto the Coles website.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a Coles shopper except for if I absolutely have to. You know, they've got some things that you can't avoid. But so I was like, okay, well, if I needed to make a meal I would eat for, you know, for dinner or for lunch, how much would that cost me from Coles? Because I know, you know, I do eat organic, which is a bit more expensive, and I go to farmers markets and local and everything, and I don't really know what a meal costs me, if I'm totally honest. Not down to that sort of detail. So I went on and I made a meal. I got an Excel document out, and I worked out, based on how much you need to eat. So, you know, you need 100 to 150 grams of meat.
Mm-hmm.
You need, you know, half your plate full of greens and, or not meat, a protein, sorry, vegans. And then you need, you know, half a cup to a cup of starchy carbohydrates. And the total meal cost, have a guess.
That's going to be really cheap. It's going to be cheaper than we think, isn't it?
I think so. Again, I'm out of touch, remember? But
like $7?
No, $2.50.
No.
Yeah, it was $2.50 to about maybe $3.10 or something.
It's less than a McDonald's meal.
It's much less. And this is what I would like to eat. So I was making a meal that would suit me. So, you know, either rice or sweet potato is your carb. But the thing that makes it inexpensive is knowing how much of each thing you need to have. Mm. So you don't need more than that sort of 100 to 150 grams of your protein.
Yeah.
Or your meat, not total protein, but a piece of meat. So it's like a third to a half of a chicken breast. You don't need more than half a cup to a cup of rice. That doesn't cost almost anything.
So we're all overeating as well.
Well, what I found, we don't know how much to eat, and we have this belief that it's expensive to be healthy, and it's not. I would choose to eat the right ingredients, non-organic, any day over organic crap. So organic is not the number one priority.
Real food is.
The other thing I found interesting, and I know none of this is on your list of
things
to talk about.
Don't worry.
It's what I want to talk about. is that I spent years ago, I spent about a month in Africa.
Yeah.
And what, and this isn't necessarily a good thing, but this is just the truth. I was staying in an orphanage doing some volunteering, and there were no fat people.
Yeah.
And so what that tells me is that being fat isn't anything to do with being poor.
Yeah.
In fact, countries like Africa, and I read this, I looked this up the other day because this is a current subject for me that I'm really interested in. Their obesity rate has grown as their middle class has grown and they can afford the Western crap food.
Mm.
So whereas where I was, it was like out of the city and it was, like I said, an orphanage. They weren't eating great. Like you'd wish they could eat better, but they were essentially eating vegetables, carbohydrates, nice. Like some grains, like cassava or probably rice, stuff like that. And then and very small amounts of meat.
Mm.
And they're the healthiest, most energetic children I've ever
happy
seen
too,
in my
right?
Life. Yeah, they were certainly happy. I mean, especially given the circumstances, very happy. And so we have this problem at the moment, and it's a really big problem that we think that if you're poor or of less financial means, that there's an obesity correlation because of your financial situation. And it's not true because throughout history, no poor people have ever been overweight. That was rich people.
Yeah.
And now what's happened is now people of less, I don't like to use the word poor, that doesn't sound very kind, but people of less financial means, but also in this case, less educated, are able to afford crap food.
Mm.
But it's not expensive to make
real food.
Yeah. It's really not. Like I was a bit surprised, and I feel like a bit of an asshole for when that question was put to me, like, you're out of touch because you can afford to eat how you want to eat. I thought, is that true? Like, what would I do if, you know, at any minute as a business owner, you could lose everything and have no money? I mean, it can happen any time. And I don't think anyone would want to hire me for much at this point in my life. So I'd be in trouble if I, you know, and I was like, well, what would I eat? And it's $2.50. Now, I'm not saying that suits everyone either. So some people won't even have that for a meal. And I understand there's obviously there's always going to be a gap at the bottom, you know?
Totally. I'm so glad you brought this up though, because this is one of your passions, which is, like, I believe one of your causes to make being healthy accessible to as many humans as possible.
Correct.
Which also then brings me to your healing, because you don't charge for that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it just fits in perfectly with your, like, value system that you're so passionate about this and passionate about educating people about good health and good values.
My whole thing is that just because something is valuable doesn't mean we need to charge a lot for it. It's a real problem in the world that as soon as people get popular, they start charging a lot, and then only rich people can afford it. And so, like, even, you know, I don't, when I work on people, so if someone asks me to help them and I do, I never charge for that. About a year ago, I started teaching, and I do charge to teach, but very little. So with my, you know, I've built my way to having a good reputation for healing, and I could charge thousands of dollars to teach.
Totally.
And I think it's $80 or something, you know. Oh, so wow. I made it and we also give it for free to anyone who can't afford it.
Yeah.
So the point of that is, like, you have to charge something because there are costs, you know, but at the same time, I don't want it to be inaccessible to people. Like, when I see transcendental meditation cost $1,000,
I've done that course.
It's ridiculous.
It's
I could teach you in 30 seconds.
I've done my Reiki masters too. That costs.
Yeah, it costs a lot, and you know, could be more effective. So I think that, but this happens everywhere. It's like these things come out, like they say, literally everyone in the world should know transcendental meditation, and then they make it so no one can afford it.
Yeah.
And then they tell you that you're not allowed to teach anyone. And so I see all this, and I think, or someone like me who becomes, you know, well known for what I do, and now I'm charging $20,000, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Which I just wouldn't do. And so I see that everywhere. It's like everything because it's popular, you see that commercially people can't help but charge a lot.
Yeah.
I went to a talk by Eckhart Tolle, who I admire, but yeah. it was $1,000 or something, or it was really, I forget the amount, I just said $1,000. It felt like $1,000, so it was a lot.
Yeah.
I can't remember, it was years ago. But I'm like, but don't you want everyone to know this? Like, why should it only be for rich people to be able to afford it? And I think that in some cases, and food is the example like I was giving before, where it actually isn't unaffordable.
Mm.
When I came back with that answer, when I was battling people online about the food thing, someone said, well, what if someone doesn't have a stove? And I was like, for fuck's sake, there is going to be a bottom.
Yeah.
But let's say that we did educate everyone and we had healthy people. I bet you the bottom would become much more supported. I think that that there will always be those people that can't afford the $2.50 for the meal, or they can't, don't have the environment in which to cook in and all that sort of stuff. But I think that if we had a typically healthy world, then it would be very different. And I think that those people would be fed because, you know, I think in a world where we all knew how to cook, we all wanted to be healthy, we wouldn't see as many, you know, fast food restaurants would be struggling to survive. And even like people saying, you know, well, you can buy fast food, this happens in America, a lot cheaper than you can make it for. It's just simply not true.
Mm.
Because if they made it.
Yeah.
And they've had to buy raw ingredients. Yeah. Like, yes, they get them cheaper than you can,
yeah.
but then they've got to pay for packaging, the factory, the delivery. Then there's margins from the factory to the distributor to the store.
Mm.
Everyone's making 30 to 50 to 100%. Mm. So a meal that you pay $10 in a restaurant for in Australia has cost them about $2 to $2.50 to make.
Wow. How interesting.
So of course we can make food ourselves. And then typically what restaurants do is they make food that's really out of balance anyway. So you go to a steak restaurant or whatever and you get this 300 or gram piece. You don't need that.
No.
You need a third of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other problem is you go to these restaurants where you're paying for food. You're not literally getting even food in any kind of good balance. So, and that can throw the prices because then, you know, your meal costs a lot because it's just a giant piece of meat and then that's going to cost you a lot of money.
And I think as a consumer that can be confusing as well because you are getting used to when you go out getting this like really high carb meal or really
super high calorie.
Salt as well. Like your taste buds change every 14 to 21 days. So I understand all this. Can I say though, having done hotel quarantine, I did hotel quarantine. You can do a lot with a kettle.
Yeah.
Right. You can boil eggs in a kettle.
Yeah, right.
You can, you know, and I was just ordering stuff from Woolies and it would get delivered at your door. And so, again, that probably sounds like a rich person's problem, but it was.
No, it's I get it and you found a way. And that's the thing is that if you are educated, so you are educated, you found a way. So the education thing is massive, but the education around, well, how to do it. And then the other education, which is a big one of that you can only learn by doing it, is what it feels like. So I can tell you that it feels better to eat healthy food consistently, but only by doing it will you understand. And so that's the education that's missing too, is that there's, you know, throughout every country probably, except for, you know, Sweden and a few countries like that, we don't even understand what health feels like, let alone that we can afford it, let alone that it's much easier than not. And it's like, and literally at the moment, like if I got on my Instagram today and posted something about, you know, all people should eat a healthy diet, people will literally attack me for poor shaming. And I'm like, but it's still true.
Yeah.
And so there's this disempowerment at the moment. It's actually pretty vicious where people will literally say, no, you can't say that. You're shaming them.
Mm.
You don't understand. They work two jobs. They don't have time. It's like, well, hold on, you have to find the time because what happens by being healthy is you find more time. I'll give you a quick example is that my health program, we offer it, when I was first doing it, and it's the same with my healing thing, we offered for people to either pay the price or come or send us a message and say that I can't afford it and this is what I can afford or I can't afford anything. We were set to say no to no one. And what I found is that a lot of people who had asked for it for nothing initially, 6 months later, would write to us and say, I can afford it now. Because I quit smoking.
Yeah.
Or because I was spending a lot more on food because, yes, the food was cheap, but I was eating a shitload
of it.
More of it
because it's empty, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And or even my depression was making me pay for things that were unnecessary. Mm. So through health, now I have more money. You know,
so
or I've,
cool.
or I'm, my brain is working better. I'm able to earn more money. You know, so that's the other thing. I know personally, my ability to succeed in this world is absolutely tied to my health.
I would agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and so, but people don't realize
because you feel clear, you're emotionally more balanced,
better decisions. People want to work with you more. You know, if you're when you're glowing with health, people it's like magnetic.
Yeah.
You know, it feels much more trustworthy for some reason. There's just a like, and I'm not like I probably get in trouble for saying that too. I'm just saying it makes you feel like people when they're glowing, it feels very magnetic.
We've talked about it before. You can walk into a room and feel the people that are energetically healthy as well. Like, yes, physically, but also probably have a good sense of who they are and what their values are. And like, you're one of those people that's like, well, this is who I am. I know who I am. And I'm really okay with that. Yeah. I know we're getting into more like emotional and
no, but it matters too. You know, it's all come together. But I feel like no matter how much emotional work I've done, if I'm not getting the rest of it right, then
it's a combo. Yeah. I can't interview you without talking about the healing journey of your life because, and I'll keep an eye. Promise.
Yeah, you're right. I told them I'd be late.
Legend. Yeah. Charlie picked it. He was like, I think we're going to go a little bit over. Yeah. I've obviously experienced firsthand your abilities, but can we go back to when you were 18 years old? You're at the health retreat.
Mm-hmm.
You're at Brekkie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share that story?
I'll try and give a short version. Essentially, I was doing work experience at a health retreat at Camp Eden, and I sat down at breakfast one day, and as I went to get my knife and fork, my hands, it's like I was holding two strong magnets and they pulled together forcefully. And as that happened, I went to pull them apart and I could feel, you know, a really immense amount of magnetism between my hands. And in that moment, I thought, you know, I've lost it. I've just lost my mind. There's something, I'm feeling something I can't see. And people around me saw, I was young, I was 18, and people around me were like, are you okay? And I didn't really realize, but my eyes were welling up because I was not okay. I was in my own head. I was like, oh no, this is the end. You know, I've properly lost my mind. And anyway, so it turned out other people could feel this thing coming out of my hand. And then one of the people who came up to feel this thing had this lump in that I could feel that was sort of probably an inch above one of their fingers. And I was like, that's so weird. You've got this lump that I can feel. Anyway, so I for some reason, I didn't even know why I was doing it, but I was trying to smooth this lump out. And eventually when I was done, this woman started moving her finger and she was crying and she was like, I haven't been able to bend this finger for 10 years or whatever it was. So that was the first thing that ever happened to me. I've just shortened that story a little bit. But that was the first thing that ever happened. And then from there, it just turned out that I could consistently affect people's physical health rapidly. Mm. So that was, how old did I say I was? 41. So that was a long time ago, and since then, yeah, really, it's been a very good tool for positively affecting a lot of people's health.
Totally, I've listened to a couple of podcasts, but I listened to one where initially, when you were younger, you were kind of like helping as many people as you could at the cost of your own burnout.
Mm-hmm.
How have you learned now? Because obviously, you've got little Rocky, your daughter. How have you learned now to kind of conserve yourself?
Well, lots of ways. I don't do as much as I used to. I try to, you know, from something I do multiple times a day, every day in the past, I can sometimes have days without doing it. So that's big. And I won't, if I don't feel good, I won't do it now. And so that's also big. That's not a boundary I had when I was younger. I used to justify actually that, you know, the problems I was working on were worse than the problems it was giving me to do it. So I would just keep doing it. But then as I've got older, I've sort of, you know, having a daughter and also, you know, just getting older is hard. So I'm more careful. And then what I want to do mostly is sort of have impact on this world that doesn't know about these things. So I try to focus on the sort of the very high, the high value things. When I say value, I mean things that can affect change. So like doing a study in a hospital, mm-hmm. or, you know, public demonstrations. So when I go on my Facebook and I demonstrate, or the teaching even, so I can sort of, you know, create more and more normalcy around this sort of stuff. So I never wanted to be a practitioner where I was just working on people all day, every day.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to do is be part of, you know, creating an environment where people who do want to be practitioners all day, every day, have a world that feels like that's normal and okay.
I love that. And that's where the teaching comes into it, right?
Yeah. So the teaching, I never realized I could teach it. I always sort of thought it was something people would have or they didn't, like I did. And then people kept asking me and I finally said, well, I can't teach you how to do it. I can show you how I do it.
Mm.
And then you can try it. And if that works, then that's great. So that's the premise in which I teach people. And basically what I do is I do like 3-day live Zoom courses where, you know, a bunch of people sign up at their free will. And then I will pick people out of the Zoom, mm-hmm. at random that have issues, and then I'll work on them and I talk through exactly what I'm doing. And I didn't know the first time how would that translate, you know, will people be able to do it or not? And what I have had is a lot of anecdotal feedback of people getting results that sort of resemble mine, which is cool.
That's so cool.
It's really cool. So I didn't expect that, actually. That was a bit of, and I said that, I was open about it. I'm like, look, you've asked me to teach and I'm going to try, because for me, healing isn't structured. Like I don't have a, you know, like some of these courses people do, where it's very structured. I see it as the opposite.
Yeah.
I see it a bit more like art, where structure really gets in the way, you know. So not that I would know, actually, because I can't do any art, but that's how I imagine it. And
yeah, I've heard you say about, it's like someone going, can you describe it to me? And you're like, but it's like describing walking. You have to walk to understand.
And that, and I still believe that, but what I'm doing now is I'm describing how I walk. and it's working for people. So I how many, I don't know. I don't have the statistics on how many who go to learn can and can't, but I know a lot of people are coming back and saying, yeah, no, I can do it. And even people who are Reiki masters and, you know, pranic healers are like, I did Reiki and I was, you know, okay. And then I've done what you've taught and now I'm healing like instantly, like I do, which is cool.
Because what you do to me as someone that gets Reiki and has got Reiki and crystal healing in the past, whatever I've experienced with you feels quite different to that.
It is. I think it is different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I haven't studied those things, so you would actually know more about the mechanics of that than I do. But all I know is that my results typically seem to be a lot stronger
and fast,
and very fast. And so, without knowing the methods, I can tell there's a difference just in results. Mm. And for me, you know, when I teach, I basically explain to people that I'm not here to teach you rules. I'm just going to show you how I do it. Mm. And then from there, you can try it and create your own ways. You don't need to just be stuck on mine. So I'm sort of teaching more of a freedom with healing as opposed to this structure.
Oh, yeah. I really like that. And also just hearing you say that innately, that kind of feels almost like it's the way it should be.
Well, it's how I do it. And I think that, you know, and I don't tell anyone they're not allowed to teach people. I don't, you know, I'm not a master of anything. And I'm not teaching people to be masters either. Mm. You know, not that that's wrong or right, but I'm just saying I don't consider myself a master of healing. I think I'm pretty good at it. But I don't know what it is to be a master, you know, so I'm not creating rules around what people should do with it either. I don't mind if people become practitioners and, and charge money for doing it differently to me, I don't mind. You know, like care about is that if anything, I'd like to see a world where everyone, you know, there's a class at some level in school and everyone is taught how to do this, because you know what, maybe 1 in 10, maybe 10 in 10, maybe 7 in 10, I have no idea.
Like X-Men, have you seen X-Men in the school for special?
Yeah, but it might not be as special as it appears because it's rare. You know, I think that it's always going to be special. I mean, it's special to hear anyone sing beautifully, so, and it's not rare. Mm. It's just not everyone can do it beautifully. So I hope healing ends up being something like that, where it is always special because it's a beautiful thing to see those sort of outcomes. But I would hope that it would be, something that you see all over the place. You know,
can I quickly ask, how did the TV show come about?
I did.
I saw it, by the way.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
You hadn't seen it?
No, I saw it when it came out, like real time. And there's heaps of YouTube clips.
So basically, I did. I did a study. I was studied in a hospital in America.
Yeah.
It was like a pilot study, I guess. It was sort of giving me a stepping stone into a bigger study, and it was very quite successful.
Wasn't it like 80% successful or something?
Yeah, it was something like that. It was about 8 in 10. It was sort of my typical.
That's still insane. That's more than regular medicine, isn't it?
I would think that there wouldn't be many medicines that across so many different issues get that sort of consistency. But so after that, then I met the editor in chief of Elle magazine at the time, and she asked if they could do a story on my work, and I said no. Not right now. I'm not ready. I need to do more studies and whatever. And before I feel comfortable with that. And then about a year later, I wasn't getting the opportunities to do the more studies that I wanted to do. And I went back to them. I don't even know if it was a year. It might've been 6 months, but it was a time had passed and I felt a bit defeated that, you know, the first one didn't lead to the next one. And so I said, you know what, if this will give me the opportunity to get more opportunities, then I guess I'll do it. And I felt uncomfortable because I didn't feel protected by the science. I felt like I was exposing myself much earlier than I ever planned. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know what? Sometimes you just gotta do that. So they did their article, and from that, within a very short time, I got a couple of TV show offers. Mm-hmm. And again, I was like, I was never in my periphery to have a TV show. I thought someone would probably want to make a documentary at some point, but I never expected a TV series. And so I ended up doing it, and that's how that happened.
Wow. It was so incredible to watch, because I think timeline-wise for me, I'd lived with you 2 years before or a couple of years before, and then to see what you were doing and the effect it was having be so profound on more than, like, I remember I used to say to you, I'll come to the epicenter and like chill with you when you do a healing. And so it was really nice to see it celebrated and kind of exposed on a bigger level. I know we're hitting time. My final question is, like, how – I'm so excited to keep watching everything you do, because you always blow me away with any project. Mm. I'm still obsessed with Pumpy Jackson chocolate, even though it is no more.
Yeah.
It was delicious. The best chocolate I've had.
Yeah. No sugar. I might do another one day, but we'll
see. Please. Yeah. The coconut flavor, my fave. Thank you. But how do you cope with the skeptics? And like there was like a Channel 7 like hoax or hero, you know, story. And it's like, how do you cope with that? Because that's a lot.
I think it's a very difficult thing, you know, and it's been something that has taken a lot of growth to be okay with being called, you know, I get called anything from a fraud to Jesus, and neither is true, you know, and it's a very wide.
Yeah.
It's a very wide
opposite
gap.
Opposite ends of the spectrum.
And so, that's not easy. You know, I haven't done anything that is fraudulent, but people will call you that. And even though all I've done is try and actually do the things that would you know, bring the science to make something credible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been good for, you know, to walk around with your head held high despite having, you know, one person think you're a terrible person, the next person think you're a legend. You know, it's a hard thing. Your ego goes on a journey and sometimes it's hard. And, you know, I got to wake up every day of my life to both extremely negative and extremely positive. Mm. And then in the middle is people begging for my help. Mm. So there's it's a lot, you know, and I think that that I'm not going to even pretend like I've always handled it all perfectly, but it certainly makes you a lot stronger. It takes a fair bit to rattle me at this point. Mm. And at the end of the day, I think I feel, when I reflect, I feel more comfortable in my own skin being who I am and not hiding, with people's reactions being whatever they choose for them to be, versus when I was hiding this part of me and I felt like the fraud.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was something that I didn't want to hide. This is part of me and I think it's important. And so I guess at the end of the day, that is truly what has mattered for me, is me being who I am.
Yeah.
And knowing that, and then, you know, like, and doing everything I can to you know, I do understand people being skeptical about these things, because there's a lot of reasons to be that. Yeah. I feel like I've also done things in a way that should hopefully, you know, start to change that. I am intentionally putting myself forward to demonstrate.
You look confrontation in the eye and you sit there. Like, I've watched interviews where journos are like, "Are you a fraud?" Cameras rolling, and you sit there and you're like, "I am not a fraud." And it's
I'd rather just show people. See, that question for me is a very unfair question, because I just will show you.
Mm.
You know, that's always been my thing. You can't talk and explain these things. You have to demonstrate it. People have to see it firsthand or experience it firsthand. And I know this. Mm. I can't defend it verbally.
Mm.
I can just show it. You know, that's all I've ever intended to do, and I continue to do. And I'm hoping I don't have to do it for too much longer, because I'd like to. You know, you don't want to always be feeling like, I don't feel like, someone said to me the other day, "Do you feel like you need to prove it?" And I said, "No, not anymore." Mm. I did when I was younger. That felt important to me, because just to survive in my own world, that mattered. But I feel like the people who know me, who have known that I woke up with this, it wasn't my fault, have seen enough that they're like, there's no question in my own circle, my own peers, that I don't think they doubt, you know, anything that I do. So I don't feel a need to prove myself at all, but I feel a need for the world to have this stuff proven.
It takes courage, though, to sit in that feeling of being like, hey, I'm going to show you who I am. And I'm okay with what's on the other side of
it. Totally. It takes so much courage. I remember when the L article first came out, which was the first media that ever happened, I sat there for like hours not wanting to share it on my Facebook. Like, I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't.
You would have felt nude.
It was a very, very, very big step, because most people didn't know I did it. They'd hear rumors maybe, but no one really knew that I did it. So that was a big step. And so, and every single thing I've done after that has been, you know, you're very, very vulnerable. But then once you get used to that, it's incredible. Like, I'd advise anyone, whether it be, you know, anything that you're suppressing or hiding from talents you might have, to ideas you want to follow through, to your sexuality, to whatever it is that you're hiding, the freedom you get from you being who you are overpowers the reactions anyone has, and because ultimately they suffer their reactions. You suffer your suppression. So if people want to call me a fraud, I can live with that. That's okay because the people who know me know who I am. The people who bother to look at the work I've done know who I am. And other people, whatever, but at least it's their own, they suffer their own feelings. So that's a big thing. And I think it is hard. I can relate to a lot of different areas where people are suppressing themselves and, you know, it's very painful. It really is.
And, you know, I was going to say, like, what would your advice be to people listening that are like, oh, I don't feel like I am living who I am, who I really am? And you've
I think that if there's something that they're specifically hiding or they're in relationships or friendships or in dynamics where they are certain things and that keeps getting, you know, attacked, I would be choosing a new circle, probably. Obviously, every case is different, but where possible, I'd be, you know, making sure I'm around people where I can be me. If it's on a bigger scale like I'm doing, I think it was definitely the best thing I ever did was to let go of, see, like I mentioned, needing, I felt like it was too soon when I was asked to do the article. I was wrong. That was wrong of me. I was waiting for a protection that would protect me from people attacking me. At the end of the day, the people attacking me has done very little. And I've actually had comparatively very little attack given what I've done.
Yeah.
When I say I get messages all the time and stuff, that's true, but it's 1 to 10,000 positive, you know. So it's not, it isn't as bad as I ever imagined it would be. I imagined it would be like an avalanche. And it wasn't. But every difficult one, it is hard, and you've got to learn to process that. And sometimes they get you. Sometimes you're tired.
I got the other night. Yeah.
They get you. You know, you wake up in the morning, it's like 5:45, and the first thing you read is something horrible, and it can get you.
Yeah.
Or you're just down and out. You've just had a berry binge and you're not feeling you're not feeling your best. And next thing, it gets you.
Yeah.
But you know what? It gets you, and then you learn to grow, and the same thing next time won't get you. I think for me, I've been very lucky that to find confidence in a world where people think horrible things about you is very powerful.
Mm.
And the nature of putting yourself out there, so whether that be, again, your sexuality or your gifts or your business ideas, whatever it is, there are people that are going to hate you simply because you make them feel bad about themselves. And that's, you cannot avoid it. But if you can become confident in that world, which is the world of you being you despite what other people think of you, then that is very, very powerful. And it's a very comforting, peaceful place to come to. And it can only come from you being like, you know what? This is who I am. I'm a transsexual. I'm a healer. I'm a whatever it is. And I'm going to be this. And you know what? There are going to be people who struggle with it.
You can't
avoid it. You know, you cannot, you just, there is no, I tried to avoid it. You cannot, you know, but.
Oh, the amount of, especially, I've just been in America, as you know, and I've been training in acting and people are like, oh, you're too old to be changing careers in your mid-30s. And I'm like, are you kidding? This is the best time to be.
You used to say that.
I used to be very afraid of my age.
You used to say that to me. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I used to get very afraid of my age and now I love my age.
You sat on my couch being like, if I don't right now get my career going, it's too late. And I was like, Lola, you're not in the right place.
Yeah,
that's You said it a lot. And it's never, look, whenever we get ourselves to our peak where we're magnetic to the world, and age doesn't, it doesn't matter too much. I mean,
you're awesome. Thank you so much, Charlie. You've shared so much of your morning with me. I really appreciate it. And it's a real honor to be your friend too. So
it's
thank
good
you.
To be your friend. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on another episode of Fearlessly Failing. As always, thank you to our guests. And let's continue the conversation on Instagram. I'm at Yummo Lolaberry. This poddy, my word for podcast, is available on all streaming platforms. I'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and comment. And of course, spread the love.